Welcome to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower, the third floor of the Bookie Mall. Reach us online at 335-2207, on the website at www.kzuu.org, and on our website, www.thepes.com. On the show today, we're going to put Tom on the spot. I think he'll enjoy it. I know I will.
Yeah, I'm not sure I will, but...
But I will, and that's all that really matters now, isn't it, Tom?
Of course.
We're going to talk about the Palouse Thunder and their recent football games. We got One Nation under God. Spring training, my trip down south. I got some bad news and good news coming from that. Plus, we got some other things to talk about here on today's edition of the PES. Thank you. And that was Landis with Cool As You, our normal intro theme. Come support local businesses and music. Green Frog Cafe in Palouse will be having open mic nights every first Friday of each month, acoustic music only. Green Frog Cafe is located at 110 Bridge Street in Palouse, Washington. For more information, contact Green Frog Cafe at 878-1490. The Pullman Fire Department invites you and your mom to their annual Mom's Weekend Pancake Feed on April 8th. Come and enjoy all-you-can-eat pancakes, ham, hash browns, scrambled eggs, and juice and coffee. For more information, contact Chris at 332-8172. On April 7th at noon, Black Men Making a Difference organization is holding a rally on the Glen Terrell Mall. They want to bring together thousands of students, faculty, and administration to discuss problems facing education today. The rally will follow a week-long workshop on April 5th and 6th. For more information, contact Elliot at 206-856-2623. How do you find better jobs and more choices? Join a job search strategy group at WSU. Students that attend these groups find more satisfaction at work and better-paying jobs with good benefits. Visit Career Services on the bottom floor of the Lighty Building at room 1-800-250-1180 or contact Phil at 335-2546 to sign up. The value of the group is everlasting. For more information, visit careers.wsu.edu. Choose a group that's right for you. Engineers Without Borders. Isn't that that group that supposedly got the information on that one ASWSU guy and used it as a smear campaign?
I don't know. I thought that was the movie that had Angelina Jolie in it. Or no, maybe I'm thinking about something else. I don't know.
You might be. Well, I don't know. Anyway, did your nonprofit organization or group have an event or a meeting you'd like to announce on the air? KZUU broadcasts public service announcements every hour. Fill out a form available online at www.kzuu.org or outside our office in Cub Room 311. For more information, contact Lucas, 335-2208. All right. I just went through a whole bunch of the PSAs. What did you think today, Tom? I think I did okay.
I think you did. I think
you're
tanned, rested, and ready after your stay in the Southwest. So
that must be it. You know, normally I'll go with that. That's a good one. That's a good one. Okay, so Tom, I'm putting you on the spot, like I said before. Now the question is,
yes,
do you want to get put on the spot early on in the show or later in the show?
Doesn't matter to me.
Okay, do you got a pen?
I don't think I...
Oh, jeez. Well, I have a pen over here, so maybe after a break I'll get you the pen, because you'll have to write a few things down. And I'll give you, you know, I wish I had my Jeopardy theme music, because that would go perfectly in this situation.
Okay, excellent.
Unfortunately, we don't have it. So why don't we do sports for about a half hour or so, well, 20 minutes or something
Sounds
like that.
Sounds
good. And we'll throw in the Reverend Horton Heat, the favorite of the PES. So, the Palouse Thunder. We had Jerry Lima from the Palouse Thunder on the air last semester. Actually, at the time, it was called the Quad City Thunder. Originally, the Palouse Thunder. They changed it to Quad City Thunder, and they decided to go back to Palouse Thunder. So it's the Palouse Thunder, which really made me happy.
Yeah, I like that a lot. But Quad City, I don't know about that.
Yeah, what they're hoping to do is be more inclusive with the LC Valley area.
Sure.
And, you know, they're hoping it would draw more donations and more money and everything, and they weren't finding that was the case, and everything was already Palouse Thunder, so they said, forget it, we'll just keep Palouse Thunder.
Right.
So anyway, with the semi-pro football team, they're in the Evergreen Football League. The season actually starts April 1st, so it's sort of a spring-summer season versus a fall-winter season like NC2A football.
Right.
Everything. So it gives you something to do that's fun, you know, during the last couple months of school and early into the summer. Well, anyway, the Palouse Thunder's semi-pro team out of technically based in Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the home games will be in Moscow, but there's actually a few home games that are down in Lewiston. We had two preseason games already, one versus the Columbia Basin Riverhawks. Now, the Columbia Basin Riverhawks has a very interesting past. They were once known as the Moses Lake Bulls, then they're the Moses Lake something else, and then they became the Columbia Basin Riverhawks. And they're actually technically not even in our league this year. They decided to take a year off and do sort of a rebuilding type thing, because I don't think they've won a single game ever.
That's not good. Yeah, you need a rebuilding year, I guess, after that.
Yeah, I mean, granted, it's only been 2 years, but, I mean, you'd think one game in 2 years. They're pretty much the doormat of every other team. Well, anyway, they came to play against the Thunder March 11th, and I don't really have many details on it, but let me just tell you the score, 46-7. That pretty much tells the story. The Thunder is just that good.
Mm-hmm.
The Riverhawks are still that bad. You know, I mean, they're in the rebuilding phase. They're, you know, brand new team. Let's give them some credit, okay? March. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I would imagine there are probably a lot more ex-college players in this area than there probably are over in the Moses Lake area. I mean, that might be one of the reasons that they're having a problem. So,
well, actually, we don't have a lot of ex-college players.
Really?
I mean, we do have a few, for sure. But actually, I think Spokane gets a bigger share than we do.
Well, yeah, that's true, because I guess a lot of people maybe don't stick around here. But I thought there might be a few ex-Cougs or Vandals around here, maybe.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we do have one ex-Vandal, Brian DeSicco.
Mm-hmm.
DeSicco. Excuse me, Brian DeSicco. He is our kicker, and I would, if I had a guess, he was a kicker in the 80s for Idaho.
Okay.
Actually, let me think here. He kicked under Dennis Erickson at Idaho.
So that was definitely what it was. 80s, yeah.
Yeah. And he's our kicker this year. So, you know, it's sort of neat to have him. We have a couple guys who either were former Cougs or had at one time played for the Cougars. Or there's a few other people that have played other college football programs.
Mm-hmm.
That are in the area. And then there's some people who actually played semi-pro in other locations, and then they moved to this area and wanted to continue playing semi-pro. So
sure.
We have a number of people. But this year, there's the coach. We got a brand-new coach, Brian Stewart, who had coached the team for the inaugural 2004 season and in 2005, actually moved away and just didn't have the time to be a coach anymore. So he stepped aside, and we got a new guy named Dennis Manning out of St. Mary's, Idaho. He comes down and coaches the team, and the goal has been all along postseason. The goal has been going to the national tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if these first two games are any indication of the possibilities of the team, they might have a shot at it. Granted, we haven't faced the last year's champion from the Evergreen Football League or anything, so... You know, I don't think we've been fully tested yet, but, you know, the team's definitely looking better than it did last year. Last year was a bad season for the Thunder. This year it's turning around. We got a wonderful running back. We got a couple good running backs. The quarterback is good. We got a strong defense compared to last year. I mean, there's just been a lot of positive changes for the team. So, it'll be interesting to see how things go April 1st, opening night. It will actually be 6 o'clock p.m. at Bengal Field in Lewiston, Idaho, versus the Wenatchee Valley Rams. Adult tickets are $7. Kids 17 and under are $5, and 5 and under you get in for free. You can go to their website, www.paloosethunder.com, to get more information about their season schedule and players on the team and look up player profiles and stuff. I've been working on that website pretty hard for the last couple months, and we're totally changing it around. It's all ASP.net fun stuff, and I've been working on getting the profiles linked up and pictures, and so when you go to the schedule, you can actually click on... the link that says view, and it'll actually pull up a player profile, and any of the players who have actually updated their profile will show up in there. And same thing with the cheerleaders. Mm-hmm. And whatnot. So it's coming along. I actually added a what I call the Thunder blog, where people can go in and blog some stuff about the games and whatnot. And
very good.
It's starting out a little bit slow. I think, you know, we're dealing with football players, so their knuckles are usually dragging on the ground.
Yeah.
But anyway, March 18th, the Snake River Sabercats, they're out of near Boise, Idaho, drove up to play against the Palouse Thunder. The interesting thing, we did our preseason game down in Lapway, Idaho, at the Lapway High School field. And I thought it was, you know, the city actually seemed to welcome us real nicely. Some of the people who came to the game actually stayed out in the parking lot, and they'd light off fireworks after the national anthem and after all our touchdowns or field goals. They're actually lighting off fireworks. It was really cool. Everybody was loving it. So it was pretty neat to have fireworks lit off and stuff. And I think we got a little spoiled. Now it's like, ooh, we want those at our home field. But I don't think we're going to get them inside the Kiwi Dome.
Probably not.
They might get a little bit testy about that. But anyway, March 18th, like I said, Snake River Sabercats. The final score was 30-6. We had 409 total yards on 61 plays. Brandon Oswenga Stark, 22 rushes for 146 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 fumble. The starting quarterback, Andy Atkinson, was 9 of 14 for 194 yards and 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. The two leading receivers, Aaron Taylor, had 2 receptions, 70 yards, 1 touchdown, and Daryl Murphy, 2 receptions, 89 yards, 1 touchdown. So some pretty solid numbers there.
Definitely.
Defensively, 5 sacks. Big Daddy Dan Wicks and Peter Hill, each with 3 tackles, leading the team. And Tui Moliga had a tackle and 1 interception. So it was an exciting game. Now,
Now, what are the rules is it college rules, pro rules? What are the rules like?
Well, the inaugural season of the Thunder, we were a part of the Northwest Football League, and they actually did pro rules with one or two minor modifications. And I loved it when they did pro rules, because when somebody caught the ball and they slid, they could get back up and keep running and stuff like in the pros. And
right.
That was pretty cool. But they've gone away from that. And in the new football league that they started up last year, the Evergreen Football League, they went with high school rules. And the biggest reason why they did that is because of all the referees in this area, most of them do high school.
That would make sense.
And they know high school
right.
rules. They,
not,
they
not
don't
a lot of
know
pro refs around here. So
yeah, so they don't know all the pro rules.
Sure.
So what was happening
sure.
was they were making some bad calls because they didn't know the rules. So the league decided, rather than worrying about referees and problems there, let's just go with what they know.
Right.
So we went high school. You know, and obviously there's some issue. I mean, things about high school rules that aren't the same as pro, but, you know, I guess you got to work with what you have at some points along the way. So, you know, I can't complain. It's still a lot of fun. You get out there and
sure.
throw the ball around, and it's, you know, pretty cheap entertainment for the family to go to, and it's a lot of fun. Now, that said, the first game was the team looked pretty sharp. The third quarter, it looked like they had a little bit of a lull, you know, and then they came back up and picked it up again in the fourth quarter. I don't know what it was. You know, the team, the Thunder, is very aggressive, and they go out there and they play hard. And they were the quarterback for the other team. What was it, Collinswood? Was running down the sidelines, and he was actually making a pretty good gain. And one of our guys came up and hit him. Forced him out of bounds. And from the press box, I couldn't tell. I mean, the lines on the field were 2 inches wide.
Mm-hmm.
And this was on the far sideline, so that you couldn't tell where the out of bounds was.
Right.
So you couldn't tell if the guy actually had stepped out of bounds and then he was hit, or if he was actually still running and then got hit. From what it looked like from my vantage point, he was looking to get a touchdown, and our guy was looking to stop him from doing so.
Yes.
Hey, it's football. So anyway, we crushed the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He goes down, and it looked like he either separated his shoulder or dislocated his shoulder, something like that. So he got hurt pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up getting out for the game. So later in the game, it appeared to our coach that one of their players was going after our quarterback. And the coach did not like that at all, and the coach was protecting his player. So this is the part that's interesting. Now, our coach, you know, he's a 55-year-old man. He goes charging out on the field and goes up to the other player and grabs his jersey and starts yelling at him. You don't ever go after my quarterback, blah, blah, blah. Well, the referees didn't like that too much. Yellow flag. This is at halftime. Yellow flags are flying and everything. They threw him out of the game. So our head coach got thrown out of the game. And, you know, but, you know, it's like if he really thought somebody was going after his quarterback, you know, I mean, you want to have a coach that's going to protect your players. You know, and if it requires him getting thrown out in the process, you know, some people said, he could have handled it differently. And it's like, well, you know, how much differently do you handle it? I mean, what happened with us was, you know, we had what would appear to be a very fair hit on a quarterback. It happened. What it looked like from them is they're coming after our quarterback to try to hurt him as retaliation for us taking out their quarterback. You know, and it's like, well, on one aspect you have an accidental, you know, dropping of the quarterback. I mean, he got hit. That's what happens when the quarterback runs the ball. He's
sure.
going to get hit.
Sure.
But when you're going after a quarterback to take him out as just pure retaliation, you know, that's a problem, and people have to stand up for it. And the coach did, and he got kicked out for it. But it was it caused some interesting stuff at halftime for sure. So
more entertaining for the fans that way, I guess. So
yeah, it was interesting trying to figure out all what was going on. You know, and up in the stands, up in the press box, we're sitting there going, "What in the heck is?" You know, because at the time, I mean, halftime had started. I looked down at my computer and I'm doing something there, and all of a sudden somebody's like, "Dude, there's a fight on the field!" I'm like, "What?" And I look out there, and it wasn't really a fight. It was just, you know, as soon as the coach grabbed the other player, then everybody started getting really tight and everything like that. So, you know, it was an unfortunate unfortunate incident that had happened and everything. But, you know, after the teams came out at halftime, after halftime. They had a really good game. I didn't see any additional cheap shots or anything like that. I think, you know, everybody handled themselves as gentlemen and you know, played a good hard game. So
good.
It was definitely a positive thing. And actually, their touchdown was scored in the last quarter of the game.
Sure.
So, you know, the Thunder was so close to having themselves a shutout. And that's actually what happened in the Moses Lake or the Columbia Basin game as well. They scored their last touchdown right at the very end.
So it sounds like the defense is clicking on all cylinders anyway.
Yeah, the defense is looking really good. I mean, they're definitely not the Palouse posse of 94. But they're a very formidable defense. They'll give up a long play here and there, but they usually don't give up much. I mean, we had 5 sacks.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
We do a lot of
quarterback is probably running for his life the rest of the time.
He's running a lot. We bring up a lot of third downs. We hold them for short yards a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So it is good. Now, let's see here. It's about 22 after the hour.
Okay.
And if you recall, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, KCUU sends me down to spring training.
Yes.
And to the
Peoria, Arizona.
To Peoria, Arizona. And to the Arizona Amateur Golf Championship, AAGC, down at Agalia Golf Course. Well, I was one of the people playing in that, and I was paired up with John Stewart, and then the other people in our foursome, Terry Bridgham and Jim Raleigh, and it was interesting. Now I really wish that I had my full report. I mean, I spent hours down there typing up stuff after the games,
yes,
and typing up my interviews, and just doing everything I could to make a very full report when I got back here. And I had it all in my suitcase that got lost at the airport.
Oh, gosh.
And I didn't save anything, of course.
Of course.
So, you know, my whole report is gone. I'm going to have to go by memory, and being that it was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, things are sort of hazy.
Sure, you may forget a few things. But
I may forget a few things.
Okay.
There's a few things I want to forget, trust me. The nightlife down there is interesting, let's just say that.
Sure. Yeah, so I've spent a lot of time down in Arizona. That's where my wife went to grad school, was down in Tucson, so I've been down there quite a bit, so... It's kind of a fun area of the country. You're right. It's real interesting, and especially during the summertime when it's so hot, that's really what they focus on is the nighttime, because you're like kind of a cave creature in the daytime. You can't go out and do anything. So,
Yeah, like Bank One Ballpark, BOB Bob, has a retractable roof on it. Mm-hmm. Not like Seattle's for rain.
No, it's for the
sun.
Exactly.
It's too hot.
Yep.
So, sort of a different concept. I mean, same thing, different reasons.
Exactly.
So, anyway, spring training, what I'll do is I'll just sort of recap what happened.
Sure, and I may ask you some questions. I have some questions.
Oh,
as a Mariners fan, I just kind of like to get your impressions on some things. So.
Sure. And, unfortunately, names are not going to be my strong suit, because that was all in that report that I had.
I know.
Of course, I lost. So, I flew down. And I was actually down there for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
The first 3 days for Mariner games, and the fourth day for the Arizona Amateur Golf Championship.
And you'll have to tell us how you did with that too. So I'm kind of curious how
you don't want to know.
Oh, okay,
let's just put it this way: Washington started crying when they saw my score. They're like, "Dude, you did nothing to represent us." Okay, you're from Idaho now. But anyway, I go down and get off the airplane. A little bit of a slowdown. It took me a little bit of time. I finally got to the what's that place called? The baseball park,
mm-hmm.
the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
About the third inning.
I see.
Because the plane flew in between the delays and getting the car and everything
sure.
else. But it actually worked out real nicely, because as soon as I pulled in, they'd opened up the parking, so it was free parking, and normally you had to pay like $6.
Okay, well, that's a bonus.
So the parking was free, and then the spaces they had like marked off up front that you couldn't use
mm-hmm.
were open. So I parked, I sincerely parked very first space. I got out of my vehicle, walked across the planter, across the street, and I into the stadium. I mean, I was that close. So anyway, I went in and got to my seat, and I had great seats, I have to tell you that. The only thing I'm upset about is that I didn't bring a mitt,
because were some balls hit in your direction?
There were none. Not a single ball came my way, but I'll tell you what, if one had, it would have hurt.
Yeah, without a minute, definitely.
But there's, you know, there's some photographers around me with all their big stuff, and none of them seem to have mitts or even worried about it either. So I'm like, well, I'm going to be a tough reporter, dude, and not have a mitt. You know, take one for the team if something happened. But anyway, so I'm down there watching the game, and, you know, I had a chance to see Jeff Clement, which is the catcher we picked up a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He goes up, and he hit a home run for us, so that was pretty cool to see. Got a chance to see a lot of guys with really big numbers on their back.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Tuiasosopo,
yes,
played a little bit out there for us.
Mm-hmm.
Saw a lot of Willie Bloomquist.
Yes.
A little bit of Jeremy Reed, a little bit of Sexton. I got a chance to see Felix Hernandez,
yes,
start, play, pitch like one inning. Jamie Moyer, watched him pitch. Watched a couple different catchers. One of them, I think his name is Rob Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you see Joe Gima catch?
I don't recall actually watching him catch.
Okay.
He very well could have. That would be in my notes, I tell you that. We had... there are certain players, it was interesting, there are certain players that played a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other players that you didn't see as often.
Sure.
The interesting thing about spring training, if anybody's ever never been there, when the team is out there playing, and let's say you start the game, and as soon as you get pulled, it's like you go into the dugout, you grab all your equipment, and you walk out of the stadium. You leave. You go. Bye. See ya. You know, and so, like, after, you know, like, the fifth inning, all of a sudden you'll see half a dozen guys,
right,
with all their stuff walking out of the stadium. And it's like, I don't know if they're going over to another field to do actual practice.
Right.
Because at the complex, they have all sorts of fields, and some of them are full field, some of them are infield only,
sure,
and whatnot. So they might be going out there to do that. Plus, you have players, no joke, during action, while the pitch is being thrown, while hits are being hit, there will be players in the outfield running around the warning track.
So it's kind of that high school feel.
Well, what's that?
I said it's kind of that high school feel.
Yeah. it's pretty interesting.
Gym class.
Phoenix, Arizona, when we got down there, was on a 130, like, two-day drought.
Yes,
with rain.
I've seen that
for
in
like
news.
130 odd,
yes,
some other days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know for a fact that that's over with, because last week the Mariners had a couple rainouts.
Oh, what are the chances? I hope that's not an omen of the season to come.
Oh,
so.
No kidding. Well, when I was down there, there was some talk. You know, you sit there and watch the news, and I mean, that was like every time the weather forecaster was on there, he was talking. You know, oh, this might be the big one. We might get some rain finally. You know, they're all excited about it, and it didn't. When I was there, it wasn't actually, you know, I was expecting it to be really sunny and, you know, really good temperature,
mm-hmm,
and everything. It actually was warmer than it was here in Pullman, but it wasn't great weather. I mean, it was overcast and sort,
mm-hmm,
of blah.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little, I mean, I did get a sunburn, so I can't say there was no sun, but actually my arm is still somewhat peeling from that. So anyway, I watched the first game when I got there on Monday, and they actually won that game, and that was the only one they won while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, I watched. I actually went to Maryville and watched them play against the Milwaukee Brewers. So I got to see the famous sausage race. I don't know if you've ever seen that before.
I haven't seen the sausage race. No.
Okay. I think, I don't know if they do it at every Brewers game, but they have like a Polish sausage and a bratwurst and a hot dog or whatever. They have several different sausage type things, and they're like these big, huge costumes, like, you know, the Shriner costume type,
mm-hmm,
thing.
Mm-hmm.
They have people in costumes like that, and they'll be at like, you know, way down the third baseline, and they run towards the dugout. You know, and it's like a race. And, you know, it's like, it's just silly, but, you know, I mean, you see it on TV from time to time. You're like, I saw it in real life.
Yeah, brewers, you know, a beer. I'm sure that's what makes something like that more enjoyable.
Oh, I think that's what...
After two or three beers, that's a lot of fun. So.
Oh, yeah, I think that's what the whole point of it is that kind of thing. So that definitely added some interest to the whole game that the Mariners lost.
Mm-hmm.
But that day was really brutal because the sun was beating down just right, and it was killing me. I'm not good in the sun. I mean, I like it to be, you know, if I'm going down to Arizona, I expect it to be warm.
Sure.
But, I mean, there would be times where it was, like, windy and cold. And I'm like, if I wanted this, I'd just stay in Pullman. I came down here because I expected to get, like, 70-degree weather.
Right.
Sun.
Mm-hmm.
So I could go play golf and watch baseball and have a good time. But, no. Had to be like it was Seattle. So, anyway. Go out there for Wednesday and had a chance to see another game where we lost. And went back for the nightcapper, and it was the Mariners versus the Japanese national team with Ichiro Suzuki playing against the Mariners.
Yeah,
interesting situation. You would think, well, wow, the Mariners and the pitchers really know Ichiro. They're not going to let him get a hit. Oh, yeah, he got hits. Him and all his teammates got hits, and they ended up actually having quite a lead on us. I believe it was 6-2 or 6-1 going into the bottom of the ninth inning.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mariners made a run at it. Jeff Clement, if I remember correctly, actually stroked one, hit it out of the park. And they just didn't have enough to pull it out, though, and ended up losing the game by one run when it was all said and done. And I went across the street, and it dawned on me. Can you think of a kind of food restaurant that Pullman has not one single one of?
Seafood.
Well, I guess technically not anymore now that Wells...
now that Wells is gone. Yeah. Okay, barbecue.
There you go. That was good. Seriously, right there, barbecue.
We've talked about that, so...
We have?
Not you and I, but I have friends that we've talked about this, the whole barbecue concept. And so if we just had money now, we could start a barbecue restaurant.
Oh, heck yeah. Hey, maybe in the new Schweitzerville that's going to be put up.
Exactly.
That would be a great place.
Sure, get a good barbecue joint there.
You know, and the thing is that there's good barbecue and there's not so good barbecue.
Yes.
And it has to be a good barbecue.
Yes.
Place.
Oh, yeah. Because there is really crap barbecue and that's horrible. So.
Oh, yeah. This place in, I don't know, if you ever get over to the Bellevue area.
I know exactly what you're talking about. The Dixie's Barbecue.
Well, there's Dixie's.
Yeah, that's the one I've been to.
And then there's also one called Three Pigs.
Haven't been there.
Three Pigs is actually a couple blocks down the road from Dixie's. Dixie's is actually where my company is.
Mm-hmm.
Dixie's is a 3-minute drive.
Okay.
And this other one's probably about a 5-minute drive. My brother is a big fan of the one at called Three Pigs Barbecue. And the guy is a big time sports fan. He has all sorts of Mariners and Sonics and Seahawks stuff all over the place. Really cool.
Sure.
Versus
the decor at Dixie's, which is you feel like you're inside of a welding shop, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, in both places, though, it's one of those things. You get there just before noon, and you'll be fine. If you get there a little bit late, you're standing in a hellacious line.
Yeah, behind 500 Microsoft guys wearing suits. So
exactly.
It's kind of funny.
So Three Pigs is actually right off of 405 in Northeast 8th.
Mm-hmm.
You turn on to 116th, and 116th, if you followed it, would take you all the way down to Dixie's.
Right.
But as soon as you turn on to 116th, you got the Whole Foods, and right after the Whole Foods, there's this, like, designer, it's a designer mall with, like, all sorts of high-end fancy stuff for, you know, rich people.
Mm-hmm.
And inside of there's a Subway and the Three Pigs Barbecue. And the Three Pigs Barbecue has some really good stuff there. But I went to this barbecue place, and the whole reason why I got to the barbecue was because I went to this barbecue place right across the street from the Peoria Stadium right after the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, they had the best cornbread muffins I've ever had. They were darn good. I mean, you know, some people do an okay job at it, but these were good.
Yes.
They were very good, very scrumptious. And so I had myself barbecue, and they had... you ordered this, like, you ordered your main appetizer meat thing. And then it came with the cornbread, it came with fries and potatoes, and, I mean, you just got this huge plate full of food. I mean, way more than you could ever think about eating. And it was pretty cool stuff. And good barbecue. They had at every table they had this like 6-pack of sauces, and it was all different styles of barbecue sauce, like hot ones and mm-hmm. cool ones and spicy and sweet and on. So it was a good barbecue. The only thing was just so much I couldn't finish eating it. I mean, I felt really bad. I felt like I was full, and I'm looking at the plate going, I haven't even touched anything. I felt horrible about it, but really good barbecue there, and that got me thinking. It's like, you know, we need one of those in Pullman.
We don't
have anything like that in Pullman, and that's unfortunate because, you know, I remember when Jack in the Box came in, and when Dairy Queen came in, that was pretty exciting because, hey, we needed something like that.
Sure.
And, you know, then Jack in the Box comes in, and, mm-hmm. oh, well, that was huge.
Right.
Burger King, you know, is interesting. They were up there on Colorado. They closed down. They opened mm-hmm. back up. They closed back down. They built a new place, and they closed back down. What's that tell you about Burger King? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to make it in Pullman. They've had like 3 strikes, and they're probably out now. I don't see Burger King coming back to Pullman again anytime soon.
No, I don't know how Burger King could fail in this area. I mean, how is it the Jack in the Box and McDonald's? Well, I'm digressing, but anyway, the point is we need barbecue.
I agree with you 100%. And we need good cornbread
because
I'm from the South, and that's one of the things that I miss living in the Northwest. It's funny, I'm in on-site training this week, and our instructor is from Georgia, and so, you know, the subject of food has come up periodically, and you know, we've talked about cornbread and some other, you know, and of course cornbread's cousin, hush puppies, which a lot of people outside of the South have no idea what it is, including most of the people here in Pullman. So
well,
it's making me kind of homesick for Southern food and good cornbread and hush puppies and all that kind of stuff. So,
well, you know, I always called, when I grew up, to me, cornbread was called Johnny Cake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard it called that before, too.
Have you heard it called that mm-hmm. before?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I always grew up. I mean, mm-hmm. I that might be a Midwest.
I think that's probably more of a Midwestern.
But my mom's from Minot, North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what she called it,
sure.
was Johnny Cake. And that's what I always knew it as. And, you know, to me, cornbread is just such a blah name compared to Johnny Cake.
Sure. Johnny Cake.
But, you
so
know, you say
better.
Johnny Cake out here, and people look at you like,
I know.
What?
It's just like saying hush puppy. It's like, what's a hush puppy?
So. Isn't that a shoe?
Yeah, it's like, what is that?
Okay, well, you know, let me think here. It's 37 after. We're talking about restaurants, and this would be a great segue to something I wanted to talk about. But we got PSAs to do. We have the Reverend who has been waiting patiently.
Patiently, yes.
And I still have the story about the amateur invitational at Arizona's Aguila Golf Course.
Yes.
And that should be
and what
well.
Your score was.
It, well, yeah. I mean, how about this? I'll tell you. I'll make you a deal.
Well, was it under 90 or above 90? That's cool.
I'll tell you my
and
score.
And what's your handicap?
I'll tell you my score if you pass the test I have coming up for you.
Okay.
So there
we'll make
go.
A deal. All right.
That will be our deal. So, you know, what I'll let you do even, after I read off the thing and you're, like, working on your problem, if anybody out there, like, has an idea of what the answer is, I'll even let them call up and be a lifeline for you if they really want to know what my golf score is. But anyway, for now, we have the favorite of the PES, the Reverend, Reverend Horton Heat. The Reverend, Reverend Horton Heat, the favorite of the PES. The Pullman Fire Department invites you to their Mom's Weekend annual... Well, let's try that out. Look at that. I have already failed. Okay. The Pullman Fire Department. You know what I got to do? I got to read what the card says and not what I think it says.
Exactly.
That's always been my problem with proofreading my own papers. I read what I think it says and not really what it says. So it's like, oh, wow, that was beautifully said. And no, that was in my mind. Okay. The Pullman Fire Department invites you and your mom to their annual Mom's Weekend Pancake Feed on April 8th. Hey, that's getting better. Come and enjoy all-you-can-eat pancakes, ham, hash browns, scrambled eggs, juice, and coffee. For more information, contact Chris, 332-8172.
But no barbecue.
No barbecue. The University of Idaho presents Pink Mountaintops in the Sub Ballroom at 7:30 p.m. March 26th. Come and enjoy their artistic art...
Rewind.
Okay. The University of Idaho presents Pink Mountain Tops in the Sub Ballroom, 7:30 p.m., March 26th. Come and enjoy their arcuca. All righty. Number three.
Take three.
The University of Idaho presents Pink Mountain Tops in the Sub Ballroom, 7:30 p.m., March 26th. Come and enjoy their acoustic and folk sound rock.
Ah, thank you.
Folk rock sound. There we go. Getting better. For more information on upcoming concert, contact Dylan, 208-885-6485, or go to www.asui.uidaho.edu. Okay, I got through most of that. Let me try it one more time so it sounds really good and everything else like that. Okay. I will try to use my announcer voice, too. Well, no, I won't, because that's when I mess things up, I think. The University of Idaho presents Pink Mountain Tops in the Sub Ballroom, 7:30 p.m., March 26th. Come and enjoy. There are... goodness gracious.
Beep. Take five.
I don't know why, acoustic looks like artistic and authentic and whatever else. Well, I'll tell you, I do the same kind of thing when I'm like, I'll be getting that later. The University of Idaho presents Pink Mountain Tops in the Sub Ballroom, 7:30 p.m., March 26th. Come and enjoy their car. You know what it is? They have it on another line, and it's like my shuffle back. Rather than having a simple word on the line,
I think it's the Pink Mountain Tops that's throwing you off. So, personally,
it might be. I mean, really, but the thing is, like, normally they have a word like the or coming or something that's, you know, that is really easy to look at the word and recognize it. But when you got acoustic on a new line, rather than your eyes being able to see, like, three words ahead so you know what's coming up, it's like all of a sudden, boom, it's here, and you got to know what it is, like, in a flash, and it's hard. Okay. I know it's acoustic now, so one would think that I know to say acoustic. The University of Idaho presents Pink Mountain Tops in the Sub Ballroom, 7:30 p.m., March 26th. Come and enjoy their it's acoustic.
Mental block, totally.
I guess. The University of Idaho presents Pink Mountain Tops in the Sub Ballroom, 7:30 p.m., March 26th. Come and enjoy their
acoustic.
Acoustic.
That's a new word. That's a neologism.
That's a George, or Georgism, I guess. That's my strategy. I'm trying to create a new word. See, acoustic is the artistic acoustic guitar.
Exactly.
It's acoustic. I like that. Maybe I'll go with it. Okay, University of Idaho presents Pink Mountain Tops in the Sub Ballroom, 7:30 p.m., March 26th. Come and enjoy their
Raiders of the Lost Acoustic.
You know what? I'm having such a hard time with this. Maybe somebody can help me out. I don't know. Let me answer this real quick, Tom. Do you got anything good to say?
While we were on the subject of sports earlier, we were talking about the M's upcoming season. While we're on the subject of baseball, the controversy has struck Pullman. On the front page of today's Seattle Times is a story about Washington State University head baseball coach Donnie Marbutt. The article alleges that Mr. Marbutt claims to have a master's degree, a teaching certificate, or both, when in reality he has neither. He also has claimed, in team biographies, it's listed that he is a university baseball MVP, most inspirational player, and all-conference infielder, and the Times says that none of that is true either. The article then goes on to say that while Marbutt was coaching at Edmonds Community College and up until 2003, that he used the school's facilities for his own gain. And witnesses say he took cash from groups that used the college fields. In another instance, he submitted a phony invoice to get Edmonds to pay for protein powder for players, purchase the college had warned him was improper. Now, Marbutt has denied any financial improprieties or the false academic and athletic claims. He said some were errors by others, some he didn't notice, and others were his own honest mistakes. Marbutt was hired as an assistant coach by WSU in 2003 to try to turn around the WSU Cougar baseball program.
And he's doing a good job at that.
Yes, they're 18-6 right now, going into Pac-10 play tomorrow down in Stanford. They have a three-game series down there, and it'll be real interesting to see what happens with this. Right now, according to the Times article, the WSU athletic department is standing behind Marbet, and he hasn't been charged or hasn't really done anything that would be an official violation of NCAA regulations, so that's not really a question. I guess, you know, it's just going to be something that him and the athletic department have to sort out, and so it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure, you know, like I said, being on the cover of the Seattle Times, it's going to be a big story, and be interesting to see how this plays out over the next few weeks.
Well, I don't know. The like I had said earlier, lying on an application, if that's true, I don't think you can turn a blind eye to it. It wouldn't be fair because other people have gotten fired over it. So let's just hope that some of these allegations are incorrect or overblown or overstated. And, you know, to be honest with you, I say, you know, it wasn't my breaking story. I'll let whoever broke it run with it until I hear officially from WSU what the situation is.
Sure.
But that is interesting all the same, and hopefully it's just not some Husky who's all upset that the Cougar baseball team's actually doing well.
Yeah.
And not only do we beat them on the football field and the basketball court, pretty soon the diamond, too, and that will just frustrate the heck out of those Huskies.
I mean, you think they could content themselves if they're in the Sweet 16 and not try to be dredging up bad stories about the Cougars. You know, I don't know if they're still having some Rick Neuheisel hangover over there, but, that was kind of interesting that a big story like that. I mean, it just seems kind of unusual to me that it would end up on the front page. We're not even talking about the front of the sports page. We're talking about page one of the Seattle Times, the story about the Cougar baseball coach who, you know, really as a relative unknown guy. It's not like Bobo Brayton or anything. You know, we're talking about a guy who's been coaching, you know, 50 years or something. You know, he's a relatively young guy. He's younger than I am. And, I mean, that's young, you know. The guy's like 32 years old, you know. And it's not like the Cougar baseball team is like, you know, not like we've ever won a College World Series or anything. So I don't know why this would be a big enough story to land on page one of the Times.
Yeah,
that seems a little unusual to me.
Yeah, there must be some Husky involved.
Yeah, it's all like it. Or it's really slow news day over in Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah, over in the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so the University of Idaho presents Pink Mountaintops in the sub-ballroom, 7:30 p.m. March 26th. Come and enjoy their You know, I sat here over here saying acoustic, 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 and I did not do it wrong once. I get on the air.
Who was it? Was it your old Comm 101 teacher on the phone that just called a minute ago? And whatever it was, they said it didn't work. So.
Okay, the University of Idaho presents Big Mountaintops in the sub-ballroom at 7:30 p.m. March 26th. Come and enjoy their acoustic folk rock sound. For more information on upcoming concerts, contact Dylan at 208-885-6485 or go to www.asui.uidaho.edu. Hey, I did it.
Congratulations.
Woo-hoo.
That's a wrap. Beep.
Now that I've passed my test.
Oh, no.
We could go to Tom's test because, like I said, I will talk about my golf score assuming Tom does well on his test.
Pressure.
The pressure. The pressure's on, Tom. Okay, so you're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower, the third floor of the Bookie Mall. The soon-to-be Bookie Mall and the whole redeveloped area up here with the police station gone and an amphitheater in its place and the parking lot gone with a grassy knoll in its place, I guess. I don't know. So anyway... If you want to get us on the telephone in the studio, it's 509-335-2207. Now, remember that number because I'm going to be giving Tom some questions here. And if you are so inclined to, like, be his lifeline and help him out, you can call us, 335-2207. 335-2207. Don't get those numbers confused with the numbers I'm about to give Tom right now. Here we go, Tom.
Okay.
The little pig got 24 bricks.
Okay.
And built a wall along one side of his garden.
Okay.
The wall was 4 bricks high and 6 bricks across.
Okay.
The little pig painted the wall. He painted the exposed faces of the bricks.
Okay.
How many faces of the bricks did the little pig have to paint? And I figured for you, I'm going to give you some Top Gun music to
excellent
to get you going with this.
I just have to wait. I just have to one funny story about this with this music. It brings back a memory. I was over in the Maidenbauer Center one time taking a Windows NT class over in Bellevue. And we were in there. There's probably like 200 or 300 of us in there. And this music comes on. We can hear it downstairs. Okay, this like it was really loud because you know the Maidenbauer Center has several levels and so this music and you can hear. And now we'll get to the point where it's like does this and then it's going to go into the dun 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 kind of thing. And what it was a Tony Robbins seminar. You know, that guy that the motivational speaker?
Yeah.
And as soon as he came in, it was like, I have never, I mean, short of like being at a pro football game, never heard the amount of like, as soon as like that, when his music came. It was so funny. Okay, so I had to share that.
No, that's
every time
cool.
I hear this music, I have to think about that, so.
Alrighty, so.
Okay, four high, six across.
Four high, six across.
How many sides is he painting? The obvious answer seems to be 24, Dick. What do you think? or Regis, I should say. The obvious answer
is that your final answer?
Is that he's painting just the outside. Yes, Regis, that is my final answer, is 24.
Okay, well, you hold on to that one.
Okay.
And number two. Gary made a long tunnel,
okay,
of cardboard boxes in his backyard. He got 15 boxes.
Okay.
He cut two sides off of each box.
Oh, no, not this. Okay. Two sides off of each box.
He put the boxes together in a long row.
Mm-hmm.
One night it rained. All the sides of the boxes that were not touching the ground got wet. How many sides got wet?
Okay. All right. I mean, 15 boxes, cut two sides off of the boxes. Okay.
Yep.
Made a tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
Which one's touching the ground didn't get wet, or the ones not touching the ground didn't get wet. The ones touching the ground got wet.
No, the other way around.
Okay.
All the ones got wet except the ones on the ground.
Okay, except all the ones got wet except the ones touching the ground.
Correct. All the sides. So what you're looking for is the number of sides that got wet.
The number of sides that got wet. I will say 30, Regis. Final answer.
Okay. Now this last one. This one... You don't probably have to do a lot of writing for it. It's pretty easy. I am a four-sided polygon. Two of my sides are equal lengths. Two of my sides are parallel. What am I?
Okay, wait. One more time. I am a four-sided polygon.
Four-sided polygon.
Okay.
Two sides are equal length.
Okay.
Two of my sides are equal lengths,
okay.
And two of my sides are parallel.
Are parallel.
What am I? And if anybody has any ideas on any of these, you can always give us a call, 333-5207. You might be surprised. So,
Four-sided polygon,
yeah. And you're lucky because I'm only giving you three questions.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I had a couple more, but I decided not to include them.
Well, you're taking it easy on an old man. It's been 25 years since I was in high school, so I've not had any math in 25 years. So just please
aren't
keep
you
that
a computer
in mind.
Guy?
I am a computer guy, but as you know, that has nothing to do with math.
Oh,
are you kidding?
It's all about logic, though. Come on, don't you do like 10 print 20 go to 10?
Sure.
30 go to... Oh, wait. But you probably don't do that kind of program anymore, though, do you?
There is logic, but not the kind of, like... Billy had five quarters, and he gave three to his sister. Okay.
Okay.
So, we got the four-sided polygon.
Okay.
And... I'm just... Hold on here. My mind is trying to visualize this. Oh, okay. Magnificent Seven, even better. Okay.
I'm just giving you random music. I wish I had the Jeopardy theme song in here. I don't. Ooh, but I do got a good song that I could play as I announce the answers.
Okay, four-sided polygon.
Four-sided polygon.
Two sides are the same length. The other two are parallel. Okay,
Well, no, not the other two.
Two
sides are the same length.
Two sides are parallel.
Doesn't say that they're opposites.
Okay. Okay, Regis, I will say that is a parallelogram. I have no idea. It's been way over 25 years since I took geometry, but okay. That's it.
Okay. Well, first off, I have an announcement to make. And that announcement is that these questions are from the third grade Wassel. The other announcement is you failed.
And I failed third grade. Yeah, well, see.
You have failed the third grade, Tom.
That's bad news.
You have failed the third grade, Brother Tom! Okay. Now, and the reason why I brought these questions out to illustrate is I actually technically got one of these right. I argue that I probably should have got three of them right.
Mm-hmm.
And we only have three questions.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the first one, you have 24 bricks, mm-hmm. six high, six across.
Sure.
And here's the part that I don't like about it is the little pig got 24 bricks and built a wall along one side of his garden.
Yes.
And when I sit there and think about that in my head, I think, okay, here's his garden, here's the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And the wall is like a retaining wall.
Yes.
So all you have is the face, the top, and the sides.
Right.
But what they're saying is he just randomly put a wall out in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So what you really have is
he's painting the top and the back side and the front
every
side.
Every exposed side.
Oh, come on.
So you got 24 plus 24 plus 4 plus 4 plus 6 for a total of 62.
Uh-huh.
So the thing is that it doesn't paint a good picture.
No.
I mean, you have to, in your mind, think, okay, really the whole idea of he put a wall along the garden is worthless.
Right.
What he should have said is, I just put a wall in the middle of nowhere.
Right. A freestanding wall.
A freestanding wall, exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, I thought that was worthless and pointless.
Agreed.
Okay. Number two, Gary made a long tunnel of cardboard boxes in the backyard. 15 boxes, cut off two sides. So you cut off two sides of the box, you got four sides left. Obviously, you're going to put the open sides to each other.
Yes.
So essentially, you have 45 sides that aren't on the ground and mm-hmm. 15 sides on the ground. Everything that wasn't on the ground got wet when it rained. That means 45 is your answer,
okay.
Not 30.
Well, see, now, that's another tricky question, because when you said sides with the boxes, I wasn't counting the tops and the bottoms.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So I was thinking, well, to cut four sides off.
Oh, okay.
You cut the sides off. You got two sides left. All you can have is a triangle at that point. So they're all going to get wet. Okay. No, that's
okay.
Right, good. Fine.
And, you know, I like your answer of the four-sided polygon, and I think this one is a bad, 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 bad one altogether. Because, okay, first, a four-sided polygon. Okay, two sides are equal length, and two sides are parallel.
Yes.
And it doesn't say anything about them being opposites or mm-hmm. anything else mm-hmm. like that. So the two sides that are parallel could also be of equal length and on and on.
Right.
And it doesn't
be
say
a rectangle
that all
for
four
that
of them are yes. of equal
right.
length or whatever else. So it's just
square, rectangle. Yeah.
Exactly. So you could have a square because mm-hmm. you have parallel sides, two of them, and you have equal length, two of them.
Mm-hmm.
That fits. You have a rectangle, like you said. Two of them are square, two of them. Your parallelogram. You got equal lengths, and you got parallel. All of those answers work, but guess what? The answer is trapezoid.
Trapezoid.
Yeah. A trapezoid.
Interesting.
Yeah, because the two angled sides are equal.
Yeah, that's one way
parallel.
To look at it. Yeah, that's definitely bogus. Way too many other things it could be besides that. So.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's why I argued that I should have gotten three correct. I got the middle one, the boxes, 45.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't put trapezoid, but I did put square and rectangle.
Mm-hmm.
And parallelogram,
mm-hmm.
what I did this one. And on the 62 one, I actually did 24 minus the 62 because, I was thinking, okay, well, that wall, if they threw the part about the garden in there, obviously we need to think that part of this wall is going to be obstructed by the garden. But
right.
No.
See, and I was even envisioning this being just one side of a wall he built all the way around the garden. So even the sides wouldn't be exposed. So anyway, yeah, it's kind of crazy.
So anyway, if you have a third grader, Tom, your third grader is stressing through questions like this right now.
Well, both of my kids have already made it through the third grade puzzle, so thank goodness for them.
Well, being that you failed this test, Tom.
I know.
I don't have to give my golf score.
But
let me just tell you, a friend of mine
Give it to us in the form of a math question that we have to figure out.
Okay, how about this? Let me think here for a second. Yeah, because if I give you a good math question, you might, the way you've been underestimating
Yeah, I would totally miss it. Or, yeah, make it really good for you. You'd sound like Arnold Palmer, maybe, so.
Okay, let's see here. Let's say, let's see here. How about the square root of 100 times 13?
The square root of 100 times 13. And that was your golf score?
Hey, don't even do that. Yes, what's your answer? You're like, let's see here. A square root of 100 is 5 times 13. That's, that's 73.
No, that's pretty good. No, 15. No.
Yeah, square root of 100 times 13 was my golf score. And that's, like I said, the state of Washington was like, yeah, you're not coming back.
But come on, this is the first tournament of the season. You know, we haven't had a lot, there's not a lot of chance to get out to the links around here in the winter. And plus, the golf course is closed now, I think, isn't it? The WSU golf course.
I think
course.
Officially, yeah, but yeah. I think you might be able to.
The practice range maybe is still open.
Yeah, the practice range is open. People are up there using mm-hmm. that. And I don't know, but it seems to me that I don't know why they would care if you just went out there and hit the ball around on the course.
Mm-hmm.
They probably
they're not doing anything yet
or anything like that. But it's like, what are you going to do? Ruin the course? Tear it up?
They're going to
not replace your divots? I think their big old tractors are going to do worse than that.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I shot 130. Not very good, but that's about actually average for me. I usually shoot about 65 on 9.
Do you have an official handicap?
No, I don't. Not officially.
Not officially.
But I guess, honestly, my last year out golfing, I was averaging right around 63, 64, 65 at WSU on 9.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever that would come out to.
So again, math problems and the 63 times two.
Exactly.
Okay.
But anyway, so yeah, my handicap would be really high. Actually, what's interesting is WSU course, my first time out golfing, if you recall, last February, it actually got really warm, and we were getting 50 and 60 degree
temperatures.
I remember,
yes.
And I got through the WSU course, and a friend of mine was going out. I was going out golfing with him, his girlfriend's dad, and another friend of his. And I had not touched golf clubs in 3 years. And I tried to get out there early to get to the driving range and hit a couple balls and try to get warmed up, but no, I wasn't able to. I showed up at the WSU golf course 3 minutes before tee time. Oh. And so I'm rushing to get the bag all in order and everything, grab everything I need out of the bag. So I go up to the first tee box, right there in front of the clubhouse, right there where everybody was. And I tee up my ball, and I take my, I think it was my 3-wood. And I take my 3-wood and I tee up that ball and I look at it and I do my nice backswing and I come back through and I hit one full foot behind the ball. And I hit so hard, it ripped the club out of my hand, caused a divot. My club flew 4 feet down, 5 feet down the course, and the ball sat there. So I had to walk down the course and pick up my club and go back and hit that ball.
Mm-hmm.
My game didn't do much better after that. It was very frustrating. Excuse me. But so anyway.
Well, you and I sound probably about the same level of golf expertise. So,
I don't know. We
would not want to partner up, I don't think, in any kind of tournament. It would be the high score wins would be a good tournament for us to be in. So, the bizarro
the highest
tournament.
Scoring team around.
Yeah.
So, have you ever played Scotty Hill before? Of course not. You don't know where it is, but I'll tell you where it is.
Okay.
It's WSU's, I'm not sure if it's the sixth hole. Fifth hole. It's the one where...
Oh, I have played at the WSU golf course before.
Okay.
So, I didn't know it had a name, but...
No, we call it Scotty Hill because I have yet to never not hit my ball up there. if you go... I'm trying to think what hole it is. I think the fourth hole, it's a short one, and it goes sort of... The green is sort of a two-level green,
mm-hmm.
and after you get off that one, you have this long walk around the hillside
mm-hmm.
and then down a steep hill to your tee-off point. And when you tee off, the hill goes down even farther and it doglegs out to the right. There's a whole bunch of sand traps, and it's like a par four, and it's a long, mm-hmm. and the the green is off to your right and you can't see it because there's a big huge hill in the way.
Right.
Well, I have yet to never not hit. Never not. That's awesome. I have not hit on the fairway ever in my life on that hole. Every single time I hit up on that hill.
Mm-hmm.
Hence Scotty Hill. So my one of my last times up there golfing, I hit the ball, and I mean, I tried not to hit it up there, but it went up there.
Sure.
And I went up there and hit my ball, and my plan was to hit it down onto the fairway, and it instead went higher up on the hill. So I go back up, and I intend to hit it down on the fairway, and it goes higher up on the hill. And pretty soon, I'm at the very, 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 very top of the hill, looking over the green. I mean, I'm just like, you know, a chip shot from the green, really. But I'm way up on this hill. And the guys I was golfing with, you know, they're down on the fairway looking around. Mm-hmm. They're like, where's Scotty?
Yeah.
Scotty! And I'm like, hey, what's up? And they're like, dude, how's the air up there? Like, yeah. Oh, funny stuff. So anyway, I get up there and I chip the ball. And I don't know what happened. It went straight and it was going right to the green and it hit and it rolled about 5 feet from the cup. And I hear one of the guys,
wow.
I didn't know they were watching it. One of the guys, I hear him go, da-da-da,
yeah, exactly.
Hey, how lucky can a man get? So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah, my golfing skills aren't quite the best in the world, but, you know, hey, I go out there and
but it's fun anyway, so yeah. What the heck.
But John Stewart ended up winning the Arizona Amateur Invitational,
mm-hmm.
At the Aguila Golf Course. It was a very interesting course. They... it was sort of semi-link style, in the idea that when you go in the rough, it's bad news because mm-hmm. you don't find your ball. Or actually, when you go sort of the out-of-bounds area. What was interesting is you had the fairway, which was green, and then the rough around the fairway...
It's probably really rough.
Was no, actually, the grass was short and dead
mm-hmm.
and hard.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually did better by hitting the rough, and your ball would go farther than if you got it on the fairway. The mm-hmm. fairway would actually slow your ball down. You did better going on the rough. See, at WSU's course, what I do is I use the cart paths. My ball tends to go great.
Yeah, it's a shortcut. When I get up there. That works.
So,
it hits the pavement, it bounces, and exactly. It works really well. Yeah, I've done that before, too, I think.
Yeah, and I tend to, for some reason, with water... it doesn't matter where the water's at. It could be short. I mean, you know, all I have to do is chip it over the water like 3 feet. And I'll find a way to hit it in the water on my first shot. You know, I don't know about water and me. I wish, what I really need for my golf bag is one of those ball retrievers because I'm in the water enough. Either that, maybe what I should do
or
is...
a wetsuit, maybe.
I was thinking maybe I could invent a little mini life jacket for my golf ball. I'll sell them. Hey, everybody watch yours out. That's my idea. You heard it here first. I'm going to create... a novelty gift of a little mini life jacket for golf balls, and we'll sell it at all the little fun places to buy stuff for people, and you could give it to your friend who's a bad golfer. Here you go. Here's the life jacket for your golf ball. Anyway, that is my idea. Anybody else takes it, I'm suing you. Because I have proof right now. It's what, 12:14 on
yes.
The 23rd of March?
Of March.
Of the year of the Lord, 2006. The year of the Lord, 2006. Not BCE or ADEFGHIJK, the year of the Lord. Anyway, speaking of the year of the Lord, Tom.
Yes.
One nation under God. One nation under God.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually at a place in Arizona.
Yes.
Where I saw that. And it was the most, it was the most unexpected place to see this.
Mm-hmm.
There's, when you're out at Peoria, there's all these different places that are advertising, you know, like they do at minor league ballparks where they, or even high school fields where they have all the ads on the outside wall and stuff. Well, this one plumbing company, actually, it's funny, they had this, their phone number is 888-867-5309.
Gosh.
Which, if you recall,
yeah,
the song,
it's Jenny, yeah.
Jenny, yeah. 867-5309.
Oh, boy.
So anyway, they actually use part of that song,
mm-hmm.
and then they would, like, somebody else would say, it's 888, and then they'd cut to the song, 8675, you know.
Oh, no.
It's pretty funny, but anyway, and then they had signs for, like, Whatabugger, Whataburger, Whataburger, mm-hmm. Whataburger, mm-hmm. and it's what a burger, you yes. know, it's Whataburger. Yes. And if you say it like you're from the Middle East or Mideast, no, Northwest, Northeast, you know, like Mayor Quimby from The Simpsons might say it, would be sort of funny. But anyway, so there I am at Whataburger with my 65,000 options of a hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose a cheeseburger with bacon and pickles and ketchup. Anyway.
It's pretty boring, but...
Yeah, it was one of my 65,000 options, though.
No guacamole?
No guacamole. Mm. Actually, avocados are pretty good. I mean, mm-hmm. if you have a slice of avocado on the burger...
But no guacamole.
I didn't have it on that particular mm-hmm. one. I mean, avocado, though, is just so good on a burger. I've had it a couple times, and it's just scrumptious. Anyway. So there I am. I'm sitting in the restaurant. And... I'm looking at some of the artwork they have out on the highways, or right near the highways in Arizona, and they had this one thing that I'm sure somebody got paid millions of dollars for. Essentially, it was a metal see-through box, I guess you could say. It was, you know, about 1 foot by 1 foot, and it was made out of metal,
mm-hmm.
and it had some bars across it here and there, and it was filled with rocks. They had like three or four of them nicely mm-hmm. placed, and I'm like, man, that guy just made a lot of money for that right there.
You didn't see any hearts or anything down there?
No blue hearts. So I'll okay. tell you what, if they want one, I know where to send them. So, you know what? I'm not even going there right now. So anyway, there I am sitting at Whataburger, and I look in the window, and they have those, you know, like they have a Jack in the Box or any other fast food restaurant. They have those, like, static things that they put in the window that, you know, advertise, hey, you know, $3.99 for this or whatever. Well, they had one at Whataburger, and it was an American flag, and it said, One Nation Under God,
mm-hmm.
on the window of Whataburger. And I was just shocked. I was like, wow, I'm at a fast food restaurant, for all intents and purposes, with One Nation Under God and an American flag on the window.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? I like this place. I like it a lot. And I just thought that was so interesting that, you know, they would... I mean, they would essentially show their allegiance in such a way that,
right.
I mean, that kind of stuff is so divisive that, mm-hmm. I mean, they are stepping out and putting their neck on the line saying, hey, we're willing to alienate some customers to
sure.
show how much importance this is to
mm-hmm.
us. And I give them a lot of credit for it.
Yeah, I think this probably went up after September 11th. I was, I actually went down to Tucson, which, you know, they have Whataburgers down there, too, and... So I went down there. I was in Tucson like 2 weeks after September 11th. In fact, I was in Phoenix. I left Phoenix on the Sunday night before September 11th. I had been down in Phoenix for training that week. So I came back home about a day and a half before September 11th. But I think those went up right after that. But it, yeah, you're right. It's a real credit to them that now given... you know, how controversial the war is and everything these days, that they would continue to keep those up. I think you're right, is definitely a tribute to them. So,
I just thought it was really neat to see that. And,
mm-hmm.
and
it'd be easy to take the cop out and take the sign down because it's like, well, September 11th was 5 years ago. And so yeah. good for them.
Very, very good for them. So, the Palusatix.com website,
mm-hmm.
or not Palusatix. You know, you got to get it to be a .com site.
I know. I'm too cheap to buy the domain. So.
$14, Tom. Come on. $14. Go to Dotster.com. $14. I don't know. You already have web hosting space, don't you?
Actually, through Blogger, the web hosting space is free. So, you know, to do your blog. So you don't have to pay anything for that.
Right. But if you were to... use your own domain name.
Mm-hmm.
You then have to host it yourself, or
yeah.
can you?
No, I think you can. if you just purchase the domain, you can just have the alias come over.
Oh, okay.
And so you don't have to have the hosting. I think you can just buy the domain separately. Like for example, we have a personal domain within our family, and we just use our regular Adelphia web hosting, but the domain resolves to that web space. So
yeah,
so works out fine.
Yeah, so...
So, I could do that if I wasn't, you know, too cheap and break down and actually have Palusatix.com, but anyway.
That would be nice.
Yes, I know.
I always say Palusatix.com.
That's on my list of things to do.
There you go. So, anyway, couple new things on there that's been
mm-hmm.
interesting. I mean, for a long time, there was There was a how much part has cost us today.
Yes.
And now we have a new CNN type headline.
Nightline
held hostage.
Nightline.
Day one.
Yes, I'm old enough to remember the days in 1980 where Ted Koppel and his hair and there, you know, every night on Nightline it'd be America held hostage day whatever. So I thought that seemed appropriate here.
Okay. So. Yes, and now. I got a couple values, a little test for you, Tom. Another test. I have a feeling you'll do much better on that.
I think I probably will. I just have a feeling.
If I give you just some random number, tell me what it means to you.
Okay.
Just random.
Sure.
Totally random.
Random number, exactly.
Let me think here. How about 341? 570.79.
Okay, well, Regis, that would be the amount of projected sales and property tax revenue that we've lost since the appeals began last October.
Wow.
Final answer.
Very good.
Yay. Wow.
Very good.
Now okay. I'm doing it.
Now, this one might be harder because it's a more random number.
Yes.
16,980.65.
Why, that would be how much the appeals have cost the city of Pullman thus far.
Wow. Very good, Tom.
It's
almost like you write this.
It is. It's just coming to me. I don't know why.
It's amazing. You are an amazing person. Let me tell you that, Tom.
Never seen those numbers before.
Yeah, of course not. No. Yes. And so right now, between that 341 and the 17, essentially, you know, we're talking about 359,000, almost 359,000. Dollars that the city more or less has been damaged by, plus the incalculable amount of hours that you can't even really put a number on.
Well, I think you probably could. I mean, I don't think the city wants to. I'm sure they could. I mean, they know how much they pay their staff. It'd be just a matter of trying to estimate. You know, I mean, it wouldn't be exact, but I think they could probably ballpark it if they wanted to. But I'm sure it's not a small amount of money. I'm sure. I'm imagine that's in the tens of thousands of dollars also.
Oh, definitely.
When you start adding all that up.
Now, speaking of money in the city, the city has found a surplus because of, from what it sounds like, there were conservative figures that were being used to calculate this and that. And when it was all said and done, it's looking now that there's about a $450,000 surplus.
Right. Or not a surplus, but they don't have to dip into savings quite. And they're only dipping into savings $200,000 versus $700,000.
Right, so, which is definitely a good thing.
Yes.
And the article in the Daily News yesterday talked that the city was going to be giving the fire department about $100,000 to go with the $40,000 that they have to purchase a new or to get a updated rescue and a
Jaws of Life.
Because the unit they have, I guess, is 20 plus years old, which is pretty old.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want to be trapped in the car and relying on something 20 years old like that to get me out. So,
yeah, I'll tell you though, it would do the trick. So I think that's good news for the fire department.
That is good news for the fire department.
I mean, their current rescue rig, I believe, is a 1988. Ford F-350 that is loaded to the hilt with stuff so much so that you can't even fit the needed equipment on it anymore. And the engine and transmission are in such poor shape that you go up Monroe or Blaine or any of the other steeper streets in Pullman, and by the time you get towards the top of the hill, if the vehicle is doing 5 miles an hour, without exaggeration, you're lucky. And there will be times when, you know, say, Olympia, which is over by, not the one where all our politicians are, but Olympia Avenue, which is over there by Rogers and Orton, starting off from the hillside there, you know, it's like it had all it could do just to go. You know, it served the purpose for a lot of years. And, I mean, right now it's one of those things where it's like it's tired. It just needs to be updated. And this new rescue has been a long time in the coming. So it's that's a positive thing coming for the fire department.
Absolutely.
Plus, you know, the Jaws of Life, depending on the style they get, the newer ones can be a lot lighter, which, you know, doesn't seem like that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. But when you're the guy and they're holding these for, you know, several minutes, trying to hold on to this and get a good and do a good job and do it efficiently, the heavier equipment makes it harder to do it efficiently because you're being forced after. I mean, you just start, it starts draining you. It's like lifting weights. I mean,
sure,
you can lift weights for a while, but after a while you start getting drained and it gets harder and harder. And I've actually used some of the newer tools even, and I was on my back on an upside down car trying to cut something out. And after a while, I was having a hard time keeping it from hitting me in the face.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just, it was so, I mean, it's so massive. And, you know, it's not like you just hold on to it and it does stuff. You got to actually, you know, you got to muscle stuff. You got to ram it into places. And you got to, when it's cutting, you got to hold on as tight as you can and try to keep it from, you know, pushing you all around. And it's just, it's definitely not the easiest thing in the world to do.
Yeah.
And having a newer equipment, lighter stuff might you know, help make a difference at when it's needed. So,
sure.
Then, of course, to go along with that kind of happy good news, the Palusatic site has, I guess, I don't understand this totally, but it's from April Coggins, so she gave you this
approach? Yeah, April had sent me an email last Friday, I believe, and, you know, with all the, because last week was a week with a lot of, you know, bad news, and you know, here and in Moscow, there, you know, seems to be a lot of negativity about, you know, growth and things, and so April was like, you know, it's time for some good news about Pullman, you know, because a lot of what goes on here recently is like a lot of negativity. So, and she just kind of wrote me an email and said, you know, here are some things that are going to be going on in the near future, and, you know, we need to get the word out. So I just kind of used pretty much the basics of what she had sent me in the email, and I just went out and grabbed some graphics of the various projects that she had listed, and I added one that she had left off the list because it's, the funding is not completely there yet for the Life Sciences 2 building, but as I think President Rollins said the other day, that the state has given us enough money to build a really big hole in the ground, you know, $10 million. So we have enough for a really big hole in the ground. You know, and of course, I don't know, but it seems likely that that they will continue the funding at some future date, that they wouldn't want to throw away $10 million. I mean, if you're gonna invest in excavation and putting in the foundation, it seems likely that the remainder of the, I think it's 50 some more million dollars that they need to finish the building will come along hopefully within the next 2 or 3 years. So I added that one. I added the Life Sciences building to the list.
Well, that's good. Now, how do you think that's going to be affected by this news that the Tri-Cities campus is now a four-year institution?
Well, you know, we talked about this probably a month ago. You know, we kind of got into, there had been a story in the Spokesman about the growth of, you know, the satellite campuses in Washington, and particularly with WSU. And, you know, Don Cox, who is going to be one of our outgoing representatives in Olympia, he's retiring this year. And it's too bad because Don was the instrumental in getting this $10 million to proceed on construction of the Life Sciences building. He raised some legitimate concerns that the campuses in Vancouver, Spokane, and Tri-Cities have much, you know, they're in much higher population areas than Pullman, which means that they have much more representation in Olympia. So, you know, as the dollars for capital budgets get tight in years to come, there are fears, and very legitimate fears, I think, that a lot of that money will be funneled to these other campuses versus here in Pullman for some of the projects that they have here. And I think that's what happened to this Plant Sciences, our Life Sciences building, is it kind of got, last year, didn't get the funding that they had requested. I think part of it was because of some stuff that was going on in Spokane.
Huh.
So, yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of, it's tough. You know, we have a very small delegation over in Olympia from Whitman County, you know, in this district, and they're Republicans usually, and with a Democratic majority in Olympia, they have really very little power or very little influence in Olympia especially when it comes to big money like this. You know, they don't really have any kind of committee chairmanships that they can manipulate, like, well, if you want this bill to get through, then I need the money for, you know, my campus. Whereas, you know, representatives from Spokane and Vancouver, have that advantage. So, and of course, I think Governor Gregoire was in Tri-Cities yesterday, you know, making this announcement about the Tri-Cities becoming a four-year university. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I know the WSU is pursuing this, and I think on some level it's a good thing, but, you know, as WSU goes, so goes the city of Pullman. And
exactly.
I just hope that, you know, I just hope that we don't see, you know, other campuses growing at the expense of the mother campus
right.
in the years to come, because it would be bad news for us. And, you know, the life sciences project, I think there's five buildings that are planned, and it's going to be tremendous as far as the jobs that it will create here in Pullman, and it'll add to our economic growth, and I think it'll further along what Pullman has been kind of metamorphosing into, which is kind of you know, Silicon Valley in the wheat fields. You know, we've got the high technology over at the Port of Whitman County Industrial Park, you know, where Schweitzer is. There's several other small companies there that are doing well. And, you know, if we had this big life sciences complex here, you know, inevitably there's going to be industries that get spun off of that, you know, some biotech type industries that will get spun off. And so that's a good thing. And I hope that doesn't fall by the wayside, you know, while they build up these other campuses.
And, you know, as long as we have the football team, I think we'll be okay. But it's one of those things. It's like, you know, we talked about this whole stadium issue. What if someday Vancouver, WSU Vancouver's like, hey, Cougars, we got this really cool little stadium we're willing to build you. And then the Pullman students would have to, you know what I mean? It's like, that could get real sticky. I sort of wonder why WSU has branch campuses. Why not focus everything in Pullman? And if... You know, rather than, I guess I don't totally understand the branch campus system, and I've never looked into it very big because, you know, to me the branch campuses haven't really been a big deal, but it's like, why have a branch campus in Vancouver? If they want a university there, why not just put a university there?
Right.
Why does it have to be WSU Vancouver?
Right.
That seems sort of hokey. I mean, why not make it South Central Eastern Washington University?
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, seems more silly, but...
Well, the way that I've heard it described, I mean, I was actually at a meeting where Don Cox, you know, talked about what the strategy was, and, you know, we have our community college system, of course, in the state, and we've had that for a long time, but that only, you know, covers basically, you know, through 2 years, you got, you know, associate's degree. And, of course, the whole principle behind community colleges is for people that are place-bound. You know, typically these are people that have full-time jobs and they can't move to go to college. They're adults and have families and children and things. So community colleges are geared towards people like that. Now, there are also people that go to community college that aren't place-bound, but that was kind of one of the reasons, you know, behind having community colleges. And so the branch campus system was also to fill that need of place-bound people that needed a four-year education. And so they picked some of the population centers of the state, Tri-Cities, Vancouver, and Spokane, that weren't necessarily served by public universities as much as, say, like the Puget Sound area. So, in principle, I think it sounds great. And I think the whole WSU brand is, you know, that if you go to WSU Vancouver or WSU Tri-Cities, when you get your diploma, you know, your diploma just says Washington State University. It doesn't say WSU Vancouver or whatever. So there's a certain amount of prestige, I think, you know, that's associated with that. You know, it's like, even though you may be a commuter student and you're working or whatever and you're going to WSU Vancouver, you know, it still looks like you went to a real, you know, four-year university, like a residential four-year university.
Sure.
So that's a benefit to them, and that's fine. But, again, let's not have our big residential university suffer, because there's only so much money for education. That's always a problem. There's always a big fight for money, and I just hope we don't suffer, you know, in this process.
I hope not either. I mean, with, you know, the Politics dot, not
dot blogspot.com.
Yeah.
Yes, I'll get on that .com thing right away. You're giving me a complex about it. So. I'll break down and spend the money. So, but of course, no one will ever use it because everyone's been using the old address. So.
Yeah. Well, you could force them to go to the new one. But,
that's true.
Anyway, at the website, you know, it's pretty neat to look at that first post on there and look at all the pretty colorful pictures and, mm-hmm. you know, all the things coming up and stuff. And it is.
There's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, you kind of forget about it sometimes. But, you know, and these are all things that, well, haven't been completely approved but are almost approved in
sure.
most cases. You know,
yeah.
there are things that are very likely that we'll see in the next 2 or 3 years.
Okay, and... You know, there's been a lot of people complaining that the city of Moscow is trying to stop, or they're appealing the approval of the new Lowe's complex that they want to put out right at the border. And, well, one side of the token is like, well, where in the heck does Moscow think they're coming from appealing something going on outside of their state? I mean, anyway, it just seems silly that not only do they want to have a big box ordinance in their small little town,
yes,
they want to force Washington to live by their rules too.
Exactly.
But you know, here's the thing: is actually I was in favor of them appealing it anyway, even though I think it's ludicrous and silly that A, they're even able to do it, and B, that they did it. I like the fact they did it, and I hope they win. And I hope they win hardcore. And I hope what happens is Lowe's like, fine, we'll build over by Pullman. And maybe what they'll do is get some land right outside of Pullman. Pullman City will annex it inside the city of Pullman. They build their big, huge complex. And then not only do we have that big, huge complex, it's inside the city of Pullman. Sure. And all that tax money goes to the city of Pullman. So thank you, Moscow, for helping us.
Right. Well, and
maybe that's an ambitious dream.
Well, I think there was a letter to the editor the other day that was kind of like what would happen. You know, there was some guy from Moscow was actually had broken down like all the numbers, like how much, you know, sales tax that, you know, for Idaho, that their rates are a little bit different. But he was looking at it from an Idaho perspective of how many millions of dollars, like over $1 million per year in sales and property tax that Lowe's complex would, you know, develop. And thanks to the big box moratorium in Moscow, that's probably why they chose to locate across the border, is, you know, because of that. And this guy was kind of angry about that, and you know how that it and might push it over to Pullman. And
right.
I agree with you as a you know, Pullman booster. I mean, I'd love to see the Lowe's development here.
But I'm just glad it's Whitman County.
At least it's in Whitman County, yeah. Because, you know, a couple things have happened here recently that, you know, we can't forget about Whitman County, because we are in Whitman County and we do depend on them for certain things. And, you know, our sales tax has now gone up 0.2% in the last 6 months. And that's a little concerning, because it's like, well, is it going to continue to go up? You know, where does it stop? I mean, that's like, okay, that's almost going to be 0.5% every year. And if that trend continues, you know, we're going to be in a lot of trouble. And the reason that the tax is having to be raised is, you know, because Whitman County just doesn't have money, you know, from the tax base. And so that would help us. At least it would keep, you know, stop these increases of the sales tax if Whitman County was getting, you know, revenue from another source. And then, of course, Whitman County is the only county in Washington that's participating in this lawsuit to overturn I-747. Because, again, that I-747 limits, you know, property tax increases to 1% a year.
Right.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I understand why Whitman County is participating in trying to get that overturned, because Whitman County is so dependent on property taxes for its revenue. But, you know, personally speaking, as a homeowner, I'd much rather see revenue being gotten from property or retail, you know, sales taxes than I am from property taxes, or having a big complex that the property tax from that is going to help, you know, bring up the coffers, and you don't have to try to squeeze it out of all the homeowners.
Exactly. And, you know, the interesting thing is that putting in the Lowe's complex over by Moscow is going to help Moscow dramatically.
Sure.
Dramatically.
Sure.
And that's the thing that's frustrating.
But they don't think it will. They think
even though everything purchased in the Lowe's complex will help Whitman County, people are going to go over. Pardon me. They're going to go over there, and while they're there, hey, let's stop at Hastings. Let's stop at Staples. Let's run over to Office Depot. Let's go to Winco. And, you know, they'll do all their stuff over on that side, and
right.
Moscow will still get half the stuff they're getting right now. And that's what's frustrating. Why it would be so nice if it was by Pullman, because then those people would be like, oh, while I'm here, let me run over to Rite Aid and stop by Walmart real quick and, you know, run over to Cougar Country and whatever else. But no, you know, we're going to be 8 miles away, unfortunately. But once again, I much prefer the fact that it's on the Washington side of the border.
I
for
agree.
Once.
Well, you know, this is just, it's the law of consequences. And the reason we're seeing the Hawkins companies pick the location that they picked, you know, which is in between the two cities, is because they're not stupid. You know, they look at what's going on in Pullman. They look at what's going on in Moscow. They don't want to have to deal with all that. And now they're having to deal with it anyway, even though they made an effort not to locate in Moscow. They're still having to deal with Moscow's crap. You know, so
I think it's ridiculous that Moscow even had the right to sue out of state like that.
Well, I'm not a land use attorney, but I have heard people who are much more knowledgeable than me say that there's never been a case in the history of SEPA in Washington where an out-of-state entity appealed a SEPA decision. So I personally don't think the commissioners, because this is going to be heard by the commissioners, not by a hearing examiner.
It's like, okay,
have fun storming the castle, but, you know, so it's going to be shot down, and then it'll get appealed to the court just like, you know, this Walmart is. And so I think it'll go to a court battle, and it'll be kind of interesting because it'll be setting precedent for Washington State, but I imagine it'll be shot down as unconstitutional.
I wish the court would just say, look, you're from out of state.
Right,
you have no
you
right
have no
of
legal
talking
standing,
about what we
right.
do in Washington.
And
no that, way.
That'll be the end of it.
Go stick your nose in the corner.
And Moscow will have wasted, you know, X number of thousands of dollars
Good.
And forced Whitman County to, well, the problem is they'll have forced Whitman County
to pay money that
right,
we don't
X
have
number of thousands of dollars
exactly.
and all for what? I mean, you know, again, law of consequences, all that's going to do is chase off anybody else that's thinking about, you know, moving here.
Sure.
It's like, well, it's like, okay, we don't want to go to Pullman. We don't want to go to Moscow. We'll just, well, we can't go to the corridor either. I mean, what, you know, what's the next spot? They're going to start
right.
looking down at Alamoda or something down on the river. You know, maybe no one will care down there. Maybe there'll
Ooh.
Be no...
That'd be really cool. Maybe we'll put a barbecue stand down there on the river
exactly.
so when I'm out boating.
But you're just wondering, where can we go now that people aren't going to have a conniption fit about it? So. Hooper. You were talking about Hooper.
Hooper,
I think that's,
there you go.
Yeah, that's...
That's out of the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. So I don't
Hooper would welcome it, I'm sure.
I'm sure they would.
They'd be like, woohoo, sweet! So, speaking of the river, this is old news, but, you know, they closed the dam for years to car traffic.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They finally opened it up last year.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the dunes have suffered
mm-hmm.
great overgrowthage of weeds and grass and stuff because
yes.
of the lack of use for
right.
all those years.
Right.
And a lot of people just didn't even really know about the dunes anymore, you know, because you get this micro
right, yeah,
population.
4 years later, no one has been down there, sure.
But during the time, I just want to point this out. During the time that this was going on, they would not allow a car to go across the river, but they allowed boats to go right up to the river. Or right up to the dam.
Right.
Through
the locks.
You'll let me get
of the
into
dam.
The locks.
Right.
You'll let me drive right up to the dam in a boat, but you won't let my car go across. And I have just as easy of a time if I wanted to do something destructive to the dam. I could do it in my boat just as well as I could do it in my car.
Or better, actually.
Yeah. I could be in the middle of the thing when it goes. So I thought that was, I mean,
it was
one of those,
ridiculous.
It's one of those things where the government is being silly.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes into the whole idea that when laws are tailor-made to solve, quote-unquote, solve one issue, what it does is it causes a ripple effect and it messes with other things. What needs to happen is laws need to be made in general and enforced the right way rather than all these special interest laws. And with the special interest laws, you have what you call the nanny state laws.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked a little bit about that on Pelusa-Ticks the other day, the whole seatbelt laws and stuff. But the
Smoking.
There you go. That's another one. But these special interest laws, the thing I don't like about them, I mean, even the smoking goes into the special interest
mm-hmm.
law, the whole idea that you got to be 25 feet away from a door, but it's like, well, if I'm 25 feet from that door, that opening, and that opening, and that door, I'm in the middle of the friggin' street smoking a cigarette, getting run over by a car.
Well, and then you start getting like, okay, well, so 25 feet as opposed to 24 feet makes all that. You know, it's like, where'd all these calculations come in? It gets really
right.
silly.
So to go along with that, you have these special laws, and people might not like me for saying this, but the domestic law, violence law, I don't like it. And the reason why I don't like it is because the way it was written, in order to try to encompass the possible situations that they're trying to protect, it caused other problems. Do you have a brother, Tom?
I do, yes.
Did you, as a kid, ever fight with him?
Yes, although usually it was the other way around because my brother is 10 years older than me. So
oh, jeez.
I was usually...
You're the little brother.
Yeah, I was just usually the recipient of the abuse. I would occasionally fight back, but not very well. So.
Do you ever think there was a single time when he should have got arrested and taken to jail over it?
Yeah, I'm sure my grandmother would have thought the same. Yeah, I mean, you know, there was one time where he was, you know, deliberately being mean and
you...
he pulled this string that I was holding, and it, like, kind of went up and went across my neck.
Oh.
And I got, like, a really bad... I mean, even to this day, I have a scar on my neck that looks like it's kind of dirty on my neck, you know, from when he did that. So, yeah, could he have gotten in trouble with the law with that? Sure, if someone had pushed it, probably.
But I'm saying, do you think he should have?
No, of course not.
No, okay, that, then that's what I'm getting at. So you had these...
Maybe at the time I did, but not
well, so you got these domestic violence
yes.
laws, and the whole point of a domestic violence law is... Well, the whole theory behind it, more or less, is a man beats up his wife... The wife calls the police come, by the time the police get there, she doesn't want anything to happen to him.
Right.
Or it goes to court, and she doesn't want anything to happen.
Sure.
He and her move back into each other, and it happens all over again.
Right, he maybe, kills her or something like that.
Continuous
right.
abuse mm-hmm. happening. And so all these advocates were saying, well, they're not doing anything about it themselves. We need to do it for them.
Right.
And in order for us to do it for them, what we need to do is we need to create some sort of law that has teeth. So what we'll do is if there's been a fight and you discover it within 4 hours of it happening and there was any kind of assault that took place at all, what we'll do is we'll take the primary aggressor to jail. Mandatory. No ands, ifs, or buts about it. Nobody can stop you from doing this.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be us forcing this to happen. So they write this law in such a way that they make it fit a situation that a woman and a man might be in. However, the way it was written, because it's a special law, rather than saying, okay, that guy assaulted the woman, take him to jail for assault, and using the laws on the books today, they try to create a special law called domestic violence. And and it's not really a special law, it's just like an additional, it's like a special kind of assault.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is, you have two people living together in a place. Technically, you and your brother, if you guys had gotten in a fight and the cops were called today, he could be arrested and
right.
taken to jail.
Right.
roommates could get into a fight and technically get arrested for domestic violence. So the thing is, and what I'm leading into is this whole entire smear campaign that happened during the ASWSU elections.
Yes.
Where the stuff was being put up about the one guy committing
mm-hmm.
domestic violence. And it was put up in such a way to make you believe that he was a wife beater.
Right.
That he was going to beat his wife,
right.
beat his girlfriend, be a really bad guy.
Right, because that's just such a stigma these days.
Exactly. And I wanted, and I posted on Kugster.com because this was being talked about on there. And I said, look, we don't know what the situation is around this. All we know is this was domestic violence. And I said, that law is a bad, it's a bad law. And he could have been in a fight with a roommate, for all we know.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been a typical roommate fight that 1,000 roommates have had before, but this one got reported, and the cops came, and they were forced to arrest. We don't know the whole situation. And then, of course, the Evergreen puts out this article talking about that domestic violence charge, and what it really turned out to be was a fight in a fraternity
right.
between fraternity brothers. And supposedly he actually was trying to break it up. When the cops got there, they arrested him with a few other
sure.
people.
Mm-hmm.
A week later, they go, okay, yeah, you didn't really do anything wrong. We're dropping all the charges. So he got arrested for DV. The charges got dropped. And this quote-unquote domestic violence was a fight between fraternity brothers. Come on. Is that really what the law was meant to protect people from?
No.
No, of course not. So you get these laws that are being made that are tailor-made, that are adversarial laws that they're problematic on society. Those kind of laws and nanny state laws need to be repealed, and what we need to do is look at the laws you already have and enforce them the way they were meant to be enforced, rather than trying to get all these special little laws and everything. And it was interesting. Yesterday's Daily Evergreen, speaking of this whole Evans campaign story, is
yes.
it was unnecessary. Was the name of this letter to the editor
mm-hmm.
by Kate Yeager?
Yes, I'm looking at it right now.
She's a junior in political science and communication,
mm-hmm.
and she one this third paragraph just really gets me. She said, "James Evans is a humble and dedicated public servant who deserves a pat on the back, not a slap on the wrist." The point is, we are all on a vertical learning curve. That is a university, after all. We are learning our craft, and that means we should be taking our cues from the professionals. So what I'm reading here is James Evans was just learning how to smear from professional politicians, and he's just learning. He'll get better at it. Don't slap him on the wrist for just learning. Come on. You know, he's a one-man show. One day he'll have an intern doing this for him. I mean, that's what I'm reading from this article. I think she was trying to protect them, but it wasn't turning out very well.
No, it would have been good if she left off the last paragraph. It probably would have been fine. But
I feel the learning from the professionals. I mean, that last paragraph cracked me up.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Yeah. Or I don't even know if she was trying to allege that the Evergreen were professionals, which, of course, is not true. I mean, it's students that write the stories there, too.
Right.
So,
yeah, I think that's actually what she was alluding to, is it was the Evergreen trying to, quote-unquote, act professional.
Right.
And, quote-unquote, trying to make a story where there's not one. But I'm sorry, this is a story. This is not some fabricated thing where it's like, oh, you know, this. I mean, you get somebody from ASWSU who says, no, I didn't do anything, and all of a sudden you find out, yes, he actually went and got the criminal histories of these guys, and all of a sudden they're plastered around campus in a very demeaning way.
Right.
I'm sorry. That is not excusable at all.
And then he gets his hand caught in the cookie jar.
The whole entire, I mean, you've smeared somebody into making people think he beats women.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. Speaking of women beaters, sorry, Tom, I know you want to say something. I've got to say this.
Okay.
Women beaters. What is up with women beaters? Now, I'm against domestic violence laws, as you know, the way they're written. It just needs to be assault. And there is two women beaters somewhere on this campus, and Greek people are holding up a code of silence. And let me tell you right now, the next time I hear somebody in the Greek system say, oh, the media is against us, we're a bunch of good people and we get all this bad press, it's like, no. You guys had your opportunity to show that you are a good organization, that overall you guys are willing to stand up for what is right.
Mm-hmm.
And what is right is not protecting two guys who are willing to jump a woman from behind, beat her, and kick her while she's down. That is not right in any way, shape, or form. And the fact you are protecting it means you are condoning it. The fact you condone it shows you are not a good organization. And when the media points this out, do not whine to the media. Until those people are turned in, I have no respect for the Greek system. Anyway.
Now, how much is that Catch the Cowards Award?
The Catch the Coward Award. I've donated to that reward. I want those guys to be caught. There is no place on this campus, the Greek system, or anywhere else. And I have to say that there's probably people in the Greek system that are totally against these people that have no idea who it is. But I would say those people in the house where these guys live, they know they were involved in this. Because there's more than one person involved in it. They know who did this, and they are keeping silent about it.
Mm-hmm.
And those people have zero respect out of my book or anybody else's book who believe that beating a woman is wrong, beating a woman from behind, kicking her while she's down is just wrong. And the fact you're going to protect somebody like that, no, what you need to do is you need to push them outside and say, hey, they're not part of us. We have nothing to do with them. They're a bunch of weirdos that we don't even want as part of our house anymore because of what they did.
Now, is this reward being offered through the Pullman Police Department or
this
the
campus?
This
is actually a private reward.
Private reward.
As I know.
Okay. Now, do now this would have been under the jurisdiction of the WSU Police Department if it was on Greek Row.
No. Greek Row is Pullman PD.
Pullman PD. Okay. So that's not actually campus property.
It's not. No. Greek Row is not campus. It's off campus property.
So it'd be through the Pullman Police Department. I wonder if they have.
They have an anonymous
tip line for situations like this.
They do have anonymous tip lines at Pullman PD.
Okay.
I don't
know.
So
someone out there could call in anonymously.
You could call in anonymously. If you go to the city of Pullman website, www.pullman-wa.gov, I'm sure their tip line will be on there. Or you could even call the PD's normal business line and ask what their tip line is.
Yeah. Yeah, excuse me, could you give me your tip line?
Yeah, or you could call the dispatch center. You could call anybody and give this information, and you could do it anonymously. If you call their normal business line, they don't have phone tracing stuff on it. You're just as anonymous. All you have to do is just tell them, hey, this is where it's taking place. Maybe the cops have an idea and they're getting more information. Mm-hmm. I really don't know what the situation is. All I know is that when two men take and hit a woman from behind and kick her while she's on the ground, that's not a man to me.
No.
That's nothing close to a man. And
not
I'm sorry,
at all.
But you got two college-age people, and I don't even know if I should be calling them people. I mean, what kind of guy can look himself in the mirror and go, yeah, I'm really cool because I kicked a woman while she was down on the ground. I put her into unconsciousness. Yeah, I'm really cool. I'm going to – oh, my God. Guys, that is just the sickest thing I've ever heard in my life, and these people are protecting them. I'm sorry, but brotherhood only goes so far, and I can guarantee you right now that those brothers who think they're being protected by their other brothers, I guarantee if that reward fund ever got up to $50,000, there'd be a lot of brothers getting ready to turn.
Sure.
Because they're not going to protect you for $50,000. I can guarantee there's certain guys going, $50,000? Yeah, it was Joe Blow there.
You know, and for the guys who did it, you know, it's just not worth it. I mean, they're going to have to spend all this time just looking over their shoulder all the time waiting for the police to show up. Best thing to do, just do the right thing, go turn themselves in and just get, you know, face the consequences. You know, just face up, be a man and face up to what they've done.
Well, obviously they're not men because they're able to beat a woman from behind and kick her while she's down. I'm
obviously,
sorry,
which explains why they haven't done the right thing and turned themselves
exactly.
in yet. So.
Exactly. So anyway, I'm sorry, before I went on my little rant
yes,
there, you were going to talk about this. Something else.
Oh, the Evans thing. It's just it was just kind of amusing. You know, it's like, well, yeah, it's like if you're going to engage in that kind of behavior, theoretically it may not be illegal, but you know, certainly unethical. And yeah, so that lessons learned for everyone. If you're thinking about a future career in politics, you know, not only. I guess should you maybe get some experience in how to smear your candidate? You'd also maybe be able to get some experience in dealing with a major newspaper, in this case, like the Evergreen, breaking the story and you having to deal with the fallout. Because you know we see that all the time happening with politicians. You know, Tom DeLay comes to mind. You know, many
Jim West.
Jim West, yes, exactly. Good. So the good experience for the people involved, I suppose. So if that's their chosen career path. So
very, very true. And you know, I mean, just I know this isn't the first time some kind of smear campaign has taken place during.
Nor will it probably be the last time.
Nor will it be the last. But I mean, I think this guy got caught red-handed, and there's no doubt about that.
Okay, I'll keep talking here. Scotty's got a call. Who knows? Maybe someone that was involved with the beating is calling in, but I doubt it. So let's look at some of the other news today. One of the stories that was in yesterday's Evergreen had to do with some protests that were held on Tuesday night in support of Professor John Stremus, who works in the Department of Comparative Ethnic Studies. Apparently, Mr. Stremus got a less than optimal performance review, and I guess he said that the chair has recommended my contract be terminated. He's quoted as saying that she's recommended my firing, and about 15 or so students came out to support Mr. Stremus. And I believe Scotty has spoken to Mr. Stremus on the phone. He might have some additional insights into this issue. In fact, I think he had even mentioned possibly having Mr. Stremus on the phone, which I don't think is going to happen today, but perhaps in a future episode we can have him call in or come into the studio and maybe present his side of the case. The article doesn't really go into details about what particular behavior that he had engaged in that would get him in trouble, but the article does mention that Neiman's decision, and Neiman is the department head, is based on student evaluations that stated students felt uncomfortable with ideas expressed during his classes. The course is supposed to challenge students to understand racial and cultural conflicts. So it sounds like this might be another brewing free speech issue with a professor. We'll just have to see how that turns out. Let's see. I think Scotty's off the phone. Scotty, you have any comments on that?
On the phone call?
Oh, the phone call? Yeah, you could say
that. Or what you were talking about.
Professor Stremus. So.
Yes, well, when I talked to him on the phone, he... We talked a little bit about some stuff, and I don't really want to say exactly what we talked about on the phone, just because he's dealing with some stuff externally, and I'm going to let him let his course take the way it needs to go. But from the article, I guess I wanted to say two things. First off, I mentioned to him the idea of FIRE, the freedom, the Foundation of Individual Rights and Education,
mm-hmm.
the protected.
It helped out Ed Swan last year. Mm-hmm.
Right. And I pointed that out to him because I said, you know, these guys are not all about, I mean, these guys are about protecting people and freedom of speech on campus. And, you know, from what the article is saying, you are being railroaded, and, you know, they would be probably very willing to help you out. I mean, that's something to look into. And the other thing, though, that I noticed in the article that just made me cringe was the race card being thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, if you read the article, there's something about racism. And it's just like, if you throw that out every single time something like this happens, people are going to stop listening to it.
Right.
It's like, why don't you call it when it is the case? Don't call it every single time something happens that doesn't go your way.
Exactly.
And, you know, and that's why we call it throwing out the race card, because it's sort of, let's throw out everything at the, you know, and the kitchen sink and see what sticks. And the race card gets so overused that it's almost like a it's almost like a buzzword that people just don't, it doesn't have the meaning it had at one time to a lot of people. So those are the two things about the article that that sort of caught my attention or that made me think about it a little bit. And I talked to him for a tiny bit on the phone, and he said he would be willing to come on the show. He couldn't come on today because he had some prior engagements. Mm-hmm. And he said that if it's possible for him to do it, he'll come on next week.
Okay.
So that's a possibility. We'll see what happens then.
All right.
But so I'll be in touch with him later on in the week to see what's going on.
Very good.
But anyway, we are just about out of time. And I was just wondering, do you have any final comments?
I don't. Was there anything interesting on the phone call that we got, or any,
no one turning themselves in,
hopefully, or
it was actually a call that the person wasn't totally listening to the show all day, but he wanted to know why there's such a huge meth problem in Colfax and all the cops down there, and nobody does anything about it, even though everybody knows who's doing it.
Huh. Interesting.
Yes, and you know, and like I told him, is I am not for drugs in any way, shape, or form. And I don't like the idea that there's a huge meth problem anywhere in Linden mm-hmm. County, let alone in my town. And I would love to see the police, if they know who's doing it and they could do something about it, I would love to see them do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I guess it was more of a, I don't know if there's really a lot that we could comment about per se, but it was, you know, that's more or less what the call was about.
Right. Well, again, it goes back to the whole tip line thing. You know, if people know of these activities, you know, you can call the police anonymously, and especially with these drug things, I think they have anonymous tip lines to call in and, you know, let it, because maybe the police don't know what's going on.
Yep, that's very true. So anyway, this is Scotty.
This is Tom.
And you've been listening to the PS on KCUU 90.7 FM. See you next week.